You're listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon, where Ray shares tips and strategies for how to become a top earner in your company. Let's get into the episode.
Two or three weeks ago, I brought you a story of my new brother in Christ, Craig. And, you know, Craig had been a, you know, legit rock star, signed by Sony Entertainment, traveling the world, realized that what he was chasing wasn't filling what he was looking for, and tried to kill himself. Took his hands off the wheel, flipped his car six times. It landed on its wheels and he drove off, put a gun in his mouth, squeezed the trigger, gun jammed. And then later, through just friendship and love of people at his girlfriend's church at the time, now they're married, brought him to Christ and turned his life around. It was incredible. If you haven't caught it, it's in our faith group. But this is a story that really inspired me, and I know that someone needs to hear it. Perhaps a couple people need to hear it. And it's someone that I just really resonated with when I met him. It was just incredible. And I think that you'll really enjoy it. And his story is, it's just incredible. It's just amazing. I mean, he has a very, very powerful story. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, would you please share that? And so here we are. This gentleman that I'm going to bring on, he is the CEO of a company called Pop Sells. And he's worked in the marine and RV industry since the late 90s. And, he's led some really amazing people. His company helps sell over 4,000 boats and RVs, over the years, and has sold over 25,000 during his company's lifetime. And he's just someone that he loves on his people so well, and they love him. You know, I was very honored that he hired me to speak for his company event a few months ago. I think maybe 3 months ago or 2 months ago, something like that. And him and his wife are, they spend their time serving the church, and through their involvement with the church, they work with a lot of the less privileged in their community that are battling the deadly disease of addiction, because, you know, that's a battle that he won. And I'm also noted to say that he is a big fan of the Crimson Tide. And so Roll Tide Roll, I'm instructed to say. And so please help me welcome Mike Adams. Mike, how are you?
I'm great. Glad to be here. And Roll Tide. I like that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I got, connected. I started following a guy from my church, and he's a big Kentucky guy. And, you know, I'm from Indiana, and he knows that. And he's like, you might unfollow me when you see all the Kentucky stuff I post. I'm like, I don't follow any sports anymore. So like, go have at it. No big deal. And so tell, just in case we have, someone on here, before we jump into, where I want to go, tell people, you help people, sell or find boats and RVs, right?
That's right. That's right. And now homes, we launched our homes division, last year. Nice. So, we're the largest, full service online marketplace, for boats and RVs in the world. As you mentioned, we helped, 4,000 sellers last year find buyers for their boats and RVs, and now over, as of last week, over 26,000 lifetime. And it's a great experience because we really have the power of an online marketplace like you would get with an Amazon or an eBay or Craigslist,
sure,
or any of these other types of peer-to-peer platforms, which is what ours is. But because these are complex, expensive items that most households,
sure,
have, we have the full service components. We have over 350 POP consultants spread out around the country. They go out and help our sellers in building their ads, taking photos, coordinating the showings, qualifying buyers as they come in. And then we have a full-time closing team that does nothing but, once we get a buyer and seller that agree that they're going to move forward with a transaction, The closing team takes them through that process. So handles all the title clearing, bank payoffs, financing, things of that nature. So that it's a really easy experience for them, but still getting the convenience of being able to keep the boat or RV at their home, continue to use it until they find a buyer and not have all the, you know, the fear that comes with, am I going to get ripped off through somebody I don't know? Am I going to go meet somebody in a dark alley and, you know, to show my RV and not come back? And we just take all that away from them, plus provide the safety and the security of the financial transaction through our secure escrow that we manage throughout the process. And so It's really kind of changed the way that especially used product is bought and sold in these industries. And we expect that it'll do the same thing as we go into homes and then eventually cars and planes and, you know, any of those kind of big complex things that, you know, Americans or Canadians or other places where we are would own and want to sell or buy.
Awesome, man. And where do they learn more? If someone has an RV for sale or they're looking or a boat, you know, home,
yeah,
where do they learn more?
That's a great question. So you can either go to popsales.com, and from PopSales, you can get to any of our three segments right now, or you can go directly to popyachts.com, poprvs.com, or pophomes.com. Either way will get you to where you need to be.
Very cool.
And we would love to have them visit.
Yeah. Check it out. Why not? Right. Check it out.
That's right. That's right.
And so let's, you know, you shared with me. So I'll tell you something. I think I shared this with you, but when was your event? It was January, right?
January, almost 2 months ago. Exactly. I think it was like January 26th.
Okay. Right? So I had literally, you know, given my life to Christ like 2 months prior to your event, but you had booked me before that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You had booked me before
in December. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you booked me in December. Is that what it was?
I think so.
Okay. And so
it could have been earlier.
We discussed me talking about faith or anything like that. But, you know, when I was up there on, when I was up there on stage, I just got the nudge to, you know, to bring up some scripture. And so I'm like, well, we'll see how this goes. And so I shared. And then, you know, I saw you coming over after I was done. I'm like, well, this will either be good or bad. And because I didn't know your story at all. And it turns out you were, you know, quite fine with it because you have an incredible story. And when I heard it, I'm like, more people need to hear this. And I love what you said. You said, that you swore to God that if anyone, that you would never refuse telling your story like the rest of your life. And I just think that's so admirable and cool. And so can you share that story?
Sure. Absolutely. So I'll kind of walk through it. And if you have questions, just stop me as we go. But, you know, real briefly, just to give you a little background, I grew up in Florida and kind of moved all around early in my life, because my dad originally was a Boilermaker, and so he and my mom met very young at 17, got married at 17, actually had me when they were still 17, and my mom was pregnant with me at her high school graduation. They grew up in Alabama. That's how the Alabama fanhood came up. I was born in Alabama. So we grew up in very humble means, to say the least, and a very, Southern conservative background. And when I was six, my mom almost died of pneumonia. We were living in Lake City, Florida. And the minister from the local church, we had never gone to church that I recall at that age, came to visit them in the hospital, and both my mom and dad got saved. And a few years later, my dad became a minister, a Southern Baptist minister. And so I was raised as a preacher's kid, from then on out. And I was your very quintessential PK. All the things you hear about PKs, they either go one direction or the other. I went the other. Any kind of trouble I could find, I was finding it. It was a pretty tough, rebellious kid. And it really kind of came out of the fact that, I was very blessed to do very well in the things that I did. So I was very good in school, and I was very good in, you know, the sports that I did. And so I got a lot of accolades for that. And those kind of accolades went to my head. And so therefore, you know, I kind of thought I could do what I wanted to do when it came to behavior and things of that nature. And so I always joke around that I was always getting straight A's in school and then, you know, straight F's in conduct. And so I was always in trouble every report card, regardless. It didn't really matter what I did in school. And so that kind of carried through my life. And I mentioned that because it really set the stage for who I would become later in life. When I got into high school, we moved to a town called Ormond Beach, Florida. And up until this point, we grew up, you know, didn't have a lot of money and didn't really live around people that had a lot of money. We lived in pretty, rural towns or less than affluent towns. But when we went to Ormond Beach, I got introduced to a whole different world that I didn't know existed. And because of my the way I excelled in school, the people that I hung out with all had parents who had a lot of money, big houses on the beach and successful careers. And it really caught my attention. And I was like, man, that's what I want. I don't want this lifestyle that my family is living. I don't need to adhere to all these rules that they're throwing down. I want to live that. And so that's what I started pursuing. And one of the ways I pursued that was through a lot of interest in going out and having fun with drugs and alcohol. And that started early in my high school career and continued, and would become a theme in my life for many years thereafter. After high school, I graduated. I went to a college in Virginia called William & Mary. And that's where I met my now wife. And initially it was kind of a great story. I went to a great college. My wife was from Virginia, so we decided to stay in Virginia after school, got married, and had four beautiful children that all excelled at whatever it was they were doing. They were all swimmers and great at it and great in school and things of that nature. I became the owner of a very successful company in the marine, power sports, and RV industry. And on the outside, it looked great. We had all the trappings of a very successful family, smart kids, you know, athletic kids, beautiful kids, great house, cars, the whole works. And in my mind, that's exactly what success was all about. On the inside, though, it was something very different. Partying was a big part of my story in college. It was a big part of my wife's story in college. And so that continued as we got out of college. So
a lot of people, are living a life that, you know, you, that looks great, you know, from the outside. And sometimes, you know, in our lives when, you know, things have looked great from the outside, it's not been great.
You know, again, that was certainly the case, you know, because I was getting accolades in the industries that I was in and like I said, it was, we had lots of fun. I mean, it was fun, for a while, until it wasn't. And so as we went, and the kids started getting, older, real life responsibilities started getting more and more, intense. And whereas my wife and even peers of mine, friends of mine could turn it off and get focused on being an adult and doing their responsibilities, I could not. I had two modes, work and party. That was it. So after a while, that started to wear on what was happening at home. It started to wear on my wife and on our marriage. Even though, you know, I did everything I could to protect the kids from what I was going through, and that kind of stress in their lives and to be there for them. The reality was I wasn't, as much as I like to think that I was, and, you know, and I was giving them everything that they wanted and giving them all the things that I didn't have when I was growing up and thought I was giving them this great life. But what I wasn't is I wasn't there. I wasn't checked in, into really listening and hearing, what they were going through and what they had to say. And so when I was there, with them, typically I was drinking, and so I wasn't fully there. And that was just creating a lot of chaos in our life. And so finally it got to the point where it became a real problem. It went from you know, me, you know, partying on the weekends, to me drinking every day, to me drinking, you know, a 12 pack every night, to me drinking a case of beer every night. And then it finally got to the point where it started to be an all day thing every day. And it really got a hold of me. So, in 2007, is when I first finally, even though my wife and many others knew I had a problem well before that, is the first time that I actually said, okay, I've got a real issue here. I need help. And I checked into, we didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism or addiction. And so my wife, I called her. I was on the road. As a matter of fact, I was at one of our clients' events and had just kind of lost control at this event, and called her on the way home and said, okay, I gotta check in someplace and get some help. And we didn't know what to look for. So what she found me was a detox, in my local town in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And that was an eye opener. So I was 10 days, you know, you check in, it's locked doors, you can't leave, take your shoelaces type of thing. I was in there with a lot of people from different backgrounds, you know, many of them criminals and drug dealers and things of that nature. So that was a shocker. And I was like, well, that's not me. Maybe this isn't the right place for me. So I spent 10 days in there and came out. But what I did get was the gift of being introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and got very involved in AA at that point. And I stayed sober for about 5 months and then relapsed, went back out. And that became part of my story for the next 2 years. And it got worse and worse. And anybody who's been involved with the program knows that it's a very progressive disease, and it never gets better. The research just gets harder and harder, and the pain gets deeper and deeper until you finally get that gift of desperation. And so for me, finally in 2009, I had gotten to the point where every morning I would wake up, I would drive to the 7-Eleven down the street. I would buy two tall boys of beer, drink those before I went to work, try to maintain throughout the day. I would generally hit some place where I could drink during lunch and, you know, just try to keep it going until I could get home at night and nobody would bother me. Well, at this point, I had now turned that into just around the clock drinking. So it was December of 2009, and I had locked myself in the office of my house. You know, we fortunately, you know, we were very blessed and had a big house, and I could kind of cordon myself off. And I knew to stay away from my kids when I got to this. And like, it was literally like, you know, being a different creature, and you knew you were going to become this creature, and you just had to stay away from everybody because you didn't know what would happen. You know, and sadly I would, you know, run out of alcohol, and I would get in my car and would drive down to the store. And, you know, the next day I would wake up and check the police blogs to see if I had hit anybody or wrecked or anything like that. Like it was that really kind of out of control. And in the end, I was on this 10-day bender and locked in my room.
For those that don't know, what do you mean by 10-day bender? What's that mean?
So I started drinking around the clock and had been doing it for 10 straight days, literally around the clock.
Eating or not eating?
At this point I wasn't even eating. I had lost in the worst of my alcoholism before this point, I had kind of gotten up to over 300 pounds. I was about 310 pounds and way out of shape. And at this point now I was starting to lose weight really fast because I'd stopped eating because eating got in the way of my drinking. So I didn't want anything in my stomach because I couldn't drink as much. And that's the kind of calculations you go through as an alcoholic. And so I was starting to lose weight really fast at this point. And I was very sick. I'd already been to the doctor. The doctor's like, your liver's shutting down. You got pancreatitis. You got to stop. And I wasn't listening. So anyway, I was drinking around the clock. I would pass out for like an hour or two, wake up, start drinking again, pass out, wake up, start drinking again in this little office I had in my house. I didn't have a TV in there. I just had a computer and like, it was supposed to be a work environment. And I was just be drinking, staring off into space or something. Like it was pretty sad existence. And it was a pretty soulless, empty existence. And when you start talking about, you know, darkness and emptiness and pain and Satan getting a hold of your life, and the pain and the evil that gets associated with that, when you get to that point in your life, you know it firsthand. I mean, you feel it in every fabric of your body. And I felt that. And it the sad thing is you get to a point though where you recognize it. I recognized it even in my darkest, drunkest times. I knew what was going on. And that's the real torture of it all is
you just keep going anyway.
Yeah. You're trapped. And so this had been going on. As a matter of fact, it was to the point where when my wife came home, you know, she was a coach for my kids' year-round team, and they were all four swimmers, and they would be at practice till late in the evening. And when she came home, she would park in the garage, and literally we had a big deck on the back of our house, and she would climb up on the top of this deck to look in my office to see if I was still alive before she brought the kids in, which was really the depth that we got to. Mm. So finally, on the morning of December 10th, 2009, at the end of this 10-day bender, sun was just coming up. It was probably 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And I was sitting at my desk, you know, like this, having probably had a beer sitting right in front of me. And I heard Mike. And it caught my, it just like shook me. Like it was as audible as I'm talking to you. And the next thing I heard was, that's enough. It is time. And I look up and the presence of God was literally right in front of me. Mm. And at that very moment, I became stone cold sober after 10 days of drinking around the clock. And from that very second, I've never had a desire to drink ever again. Mm. And I picked up the phone and I called my sponsor. I had a sponsor in AA and I said, hey, Luke, I'm ready to go to rehab. This was on a Thursday. I had a huge client meeting the next day. Fortunately, I had a sales manager at the time that was very gracious and came and picked me up and babysat me through that meeting. And we ended up doing pretty well there. And that Saturday, just to kind of highlight the dichotomy and what I was living, we had our annual year-end awards banquet party type thing at the company that I was at the time. And I got the account manager of the year award. I had broken all the sales records at this company, but at the same time, I was about to drink myself to death. And then that Monday, I drove up to Father Martin's Ashley, one of the most magical places on the face of the earth, and spent 28 days in their program there. Mm. And it was interesting on Saturday morning as we were, I had told my wife what had happened and that I was going to go to rehab. And as we were driving to a birthday party for my youngest daughter, after we dropped her off, she looked at me and said, you know, it's a miracle because I was literally had everything arranged to leave you this weekend. And praise be to God. We're still married. We'll celebrate 30 years of marriage this year. In August.
She's wonderful. I've met her. She's amazing.
Yes, she is amazing. She is an amazing saint is what she is. But yeah, that was my experience in getting sober. And so, you know, after that, I got very involved in the in AA and the program, had many sponsees and had a great sponsor, and this was up in Virginia Beach, and started really kind of following the guidance of the program. And the program is very much about finding a higher power of your understanding, and at the time that was something that I could really sink my teeth into because I had run away from the God of my dad's understanding. That was a God I didn't really want to have anything to do with, because what I saw was wrongly. I'll make sure I'm clear about this. But what I saw and heard, because it's what I wanted to see and hear, was a God that was very damning and very rules based, frankly, impossible to satisfy. That's what I heard wrongly when I was growing up, and so I had run from that. And so in AA, I started to look for lots of ways to get in touch with God, lots of spirituality. I had minored in religion in college, and so I had taken a lot of Buddhism and Hinduism, and really kind of early in my sobriety, got involved with a lot of the, you know, meditation and Eastern mysticism type of thoughts about what spirituality is. And I was very fortunate. My sponsor started inviting me to his house for breakfast every week, and he was showing me these Numa videos, which was a guy named Rob Bell, who at the time was still very much a practicing, you know, Christian minister that he did these. And it was a very soft way for me to get introduced to Christ. And so then Luke was like, hey, why don't you download this new app called YouVersion and start reading the Bible? And I was like, oh, I guess I could do that as part of my other readings. I'll do that. And what happened was, is over the next 7 years, I went on this journey. I was not a practicing Christian at that time. I did believe in God, you know, because it was, you know, a requirement of being sober, and he had appeared to me. I mean, how could I not? Like, but I didn't realize that the importance of Christ in that relationship. And so as I started reading the Bible more and more and more, and experiencing the love of Christ in my life, and hearing the message directly from his word, the truth of his word, and the love of Christ became overwhelming to me, both from a spiritual, emotional, heart level, as well as from a logical level. And so as I really started to think about my relationship with God and what role Jesus Christ plays in that, it became very apparent to me that two things. One, everything you hear socially or in society about what the Bible has to say or what Jesus said, juxtaposed to what the Bible actually says to you, it's two very different messages. Yeah. And when you start really reading his word and hearing him convict your heart and get that calling, you start to realize not just at a spiritual, emotional level, but at a intellectual, logical level, there truly is only one way. There truly is only one answer to a relationship with God.
Narrow the way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so finally, in 2017, so meanwhile, I'm doing a great job in my sobriety. Very dedicated to it. But now I'm starting to get convicted, more and more convicted. And I wasn't feeling completely whole. I was sober, but not completely whole. Still lots of good things going on. I had gone down to the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, which is a show that I've been to 20 times. It typically in my past life would have been a huge party. But this time I wasn't even going out to dinner with people. I was just going to the show, doing my thing, coming home to the hotel and getting on my knees and praying and saying, take me. Whatever you want to do in my life, just do it. I'm yours. I'm 100% yours. And it was the true final surrender to Jesus and following him. At the time, I was the CEO for the largest boat dealer in the country. That's how we ended up back down in Florida. And I walked in on Monday, and after this boat show, after committing myself to Christ, and got fired. Satan went right in right away. Shortly thereafter, I had a daughter who had a horrific incident at the college that she was at. I had to go up and save her literally from being sex trafficked. I had a son who lost his best friend in college, his roommate in a car accident that my son found and had to tell the parents about. He's the one that had to break the news to the parents. I had another daughter who almost died from an eating disorder, had 7 months in treatment, had a company that went bankrupt. All after I gave myself to Christ.
Yeah.
But you know, throughout that period, what was happening is my wife and I were becoming closer. Mm. Our family was becoming closer, and we were healing, even though it looked like the opposite.
Yeah.
From the outside, it looked like a train wreck, a dumpster fire. On the inside, it was something very beautiful because our faith was growing. Christ was disciplining us. He was crafting us, changing us, building our relationship with him. And when we got to the other side of that, we woke up one day and we realized, man, what a life, what joy, what fullness that we feel now. And so it literally became the exact opposite of what it was back in the day, where everything looked great on the outside, but on the inside, right, it was a disaster. So that's been my experience, and it just gets better every day. Awesome. Challenges come, difficulties come.
Yeah, that was amazing. So a couple things. One, I'm going to give a shout out to Quentin. Quentin says, I'm at lunch in rehab watching this, and I can't.
Amen, brother.
And so, Mike, any specific words of wisdom to our man, Quentin, here?
Oh, absolutely. I could go on all day on this. So, I'm sure they're teaching you many wonderful things right now. The couple of things that I took out of rehab when I got out was, number one, and this was critical to me, first things first. I know you've heard that saying, and that was my mantra. And so that meant I had to put my sobriety above everything. Second thing I would say is, you're watching this, so that means you're getting exposure to a relationship with Jesus from day one of sobriety, as opposed to, for me, 7 years later. Take advantage of that, because it's a beautiful thing. And then another thing I'll say is, in addition to first things first, it was, in my mind, I just kept saying to myself, just keep doing the next right thing. And it's great in the rooms, you hear that saying and people are like, well, how do you know what the next right thing is? And the same thing we always say is, almost without a shadow of a doubt, you know what the next wrong thing is. Don't do that. And as long as you adhere to that rule, life will be good. You just got to put that sobriety first, do your 90 and 90 and, get a sponsor right away, work the steps, meeting makers make it, all the things that you'll hear in rehab, they're real. And if you follow it right away, you can avoid the 2 years of pain that I went through, going in and out of the rooms. And most importantly, just give yourself to Christ and have that faith and pray.
Powerful. Okay. I see at least one more, and then I got one that I'll share and you'll let you share too. Joan asks, and so what's funny is, when I came home, I told my wife your story, and she was like, oh my God, what did it look like? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't ask him. She goes, you didn't ask him? Like, how could you not ask him this question? That's the biggest question. Like, she freaked out. And Joan's asking, this question too. Like, can you describe it more?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody asked me this question, and it's really interesting because, no, I did not see Jesus's face. And let me start with that. It was clearly a physical presence in the room that was so bright and so overwhelming at the moment that I didn't even really have time to digest what was, in retrospect, I'm like, man, I really wish I would have paid attention more to what he looked like.
Taking a picture.
it was so overwhelming that you couldn't think, literally. Yeah. It was that. I mean, literally, I went from drinking 10 straight days around the clock. I mean, who knows what my blood alcohol level was, to being legitimately stone cold sober. Mm. I could have gotten in a car and driven. It was that much of a start. I didn't, but a start difference. And so it was a very obvious presence. I just remember it being very bright, and it was very obvious that God was standing there talking to me. And since that time, I've read stories like this, you read about these in the Bible, and I can resonate with some of those, where you have Samson's mom who talks to the man who comes to let her know that, Samson's on his way, or.
And the husband's you wait there.
Yeah. I think it was, Balak that was riding his donkey, and the angel appeared with the sword. And, it was one of those type of, presences that was just so palpable. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. And then, I'll share a little bit for this, and then and you share as well. But our friend Tanis, waiting for scientific proof, not opposed at all, just my belief. And so, couple things that I'll just share on here is I definitely used to be this. I definitely used to think this way. And you know, the first thing that I remember doing along that I feel like plays along this line is I was up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I was with my friend Brian, who's a real estate partner at the time. And he's like, "Hey, this was probably 17 years ago." And he's like, "Hey, I'm going to church. You should come with us." And I'm like, I don't do church. You guys go." And he's like, "Ah, come on." And he, convinced me to go. And so on the way there, I just had this thought, and I'm like, "God, if you're real, I want to hear the words water buffalo," right? I was just prove to me, right? Gideon with the fleece, right?
So
we go to, and for those that are just, new to this journey, I came to Christ 4 months ago. And so I still have some holes in my knowledge that I'm filling in. And so we go, and for the first time in church history, they have a pastor visiting from India who tells the story about a stubborn water buffalo.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, wow, what a coincidence. Which is interesting because Hebrew is God's language, and there actually is no Hebrew word for coincidence. And so I tell Brian, and Brian's like, oh my God, what are you going to do with this? Nothing. I didn't do anything with it. I didn't start going to church. I didn't start believing. I literally did. He did exactly the hoop that I asked him to jump through. Nothing changed about me. And then this, this weekend I was hired to speak in California, and, this beautiful girl came up to me, and, she had got this crazy hot pink hair, and after my speech, cause I mentioned some scripture, she said, "I feel like I'm supposed to learn more about God, but I just don't know that he exists." And I said, "Ask for a sign." And we talked probably for about an hour. And I said, "Ask for a sign." And so she comes up to me the next morning, and she said, "You'll never believe this." And I'm like, "I probably will." And she says, in the Uber that I was in last night, the Uber driver turns to me and says, "I think I'm supposed to give you these." And he hands her two Jesus like cards. One says joy, one says faith. And she came to me, and she goes, "Yeah, that's kind of wild, right?" And I said, ask for something else. I don't know why I said that, right? But I said, ask for something else. And so the next morning, which was Sunday morning, I do the service, and I'm asked to do the service, and I do the altar call. And, it was so, beautiful, like 20-ish people came and gave their life to Christ. And she was one of them. And she said to me, she goes, "Can I show you something?" I'm like, "Sure." And she goes, "Yesterday, I said, God, if you're real, I want to find something more than $5 on the ground." Right? That's pretty specific, right? That's not a random, that's pretty specific. And so she was walking around later that day. She looks on the ground. There's a $5 bill crumpled up. She gets it. She uncrumples it, and she shows me how it was crumpled. She uncrumples it, and there's a $20 bill on the inside.
That's great.
So God just loves to do this kind of stuff. And, she asked specifically something more than $5, and it looked like $5. It was actually $25. And I know, when I was starting this journey, I was very unsure, and I was like, okay, why did Jesus have to die? How come we're sinners? I didn't understand anything, literally anything 4 months ago. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, people told me to watch Case for Christ. And so, I watched it, and I thought it was good. For me, it didn't blow my mind, but I thought it was good. But what did blow my mind was Case for Heaven, where they interview all these people that had these near-death experiences where they died on the table and they could say conversations that had happened while they were dead on the table. They described tools that were used while they were dead on the table, and then how so many of them described actually having a conversation with Jesus. And one of them described how he was like attacked by demons. And I'm like, it hit me that, dude, to be atheist, you have to have a high level of faith, because you have to have faith that you're right. You have to have faith that there is nothing. And I think that, you know, what I've come to realize, that whatever our relationship with our biological father is, how we see our heavenly father. And for me, I saw, you know, I saw God as mean, uncaring. I'm not a priority. I'm not important, because that's my relation. That was my relationship with my biological father. And so I think that some of us that, you know, that, you know, want more proof or maybe resistant to it, I would just, you know, and not necessarily you, you know, Tanis, I mean, you got to, you know, in your heart, what, you know, what you want. But for me, I had to ask myself, you know, am I seeing God as in the same light I'm seeing my heavenly father? And if you do, you know, if you are seeking, ask for a sign, because, you know, I believe it's in James 2 where he talks about, you know, hey, even demons believe in God, right? So the belief in God isn't like, you know, astounding, right? But it's, you know, faith is the thing that you cannot see. Ask for a sign. Ask for a weird one. I did a weird one the other day, and it happened, and it was very strange. And I no longer ask, hey, if you're real, but I may say something like, hey, if I'm supposed to help this person, have them say this word. Hey, if I'm supposed to go down this road and work with this company, have them do this. And all of a sudden, you know, that happens. And so what would you say if someone's on here and they're like, you know, all right, this sounds really good. I mean, you were tripped out of your mind after 10 days. You saw something, and, you know, and now, you know, now you, you know, give God, you know, the credit for it. What would you say to someone who's on here who maybe is more scientific based and like, you know, well, how can I know? Like, what would your take? You heard my take. What's your take?
Well, I would say, yeah, a couple of things. I mean, one, it was certainly something that plagued me, you know, throughout my, you know, obviously growing up with a dad who was a Southern Baptist minister, it wasn't like I was oblivious to the story of Christ. But when I went to college, you know, a pretty decent school academically, you know, I felt like I had transcended, you know, those kind of myths, that I needed something way more academic by which I could live my life. And so, and, you know,
I was same. Like I thought, right? That mythology, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm way more evolved than that. And so The one thing that I was very fortunate, I think, in all my life is I've always been very open-minded, which is probably why I, you know, explored a lot of things I did explore. And I tend to try to take me where the facts lead me, and have always tried to do that. And as I started delving back into the Bible and reading the Bible, I also started researching, like, how do we know that this is the Word of God? How do we know that I can trust this? And there's really two ways to do it. One is look at the evidence, which there's, you know, way smarter people and apologetics out there than me that can speak to that. But it's, when you really dig into it, it's pretty overwhelmingly evidence-based in the validity of the Bible. The second is experiential, just like in science, right? We experiment, right? We test our hypotheses. And the one thing that really, I think, was a turning point for me is when I finally recognized that all my major scientific understanding and belief is based on unproven hypothesis. We cannot explain. So I'll take take one of the greatest theories of all time, the theory of relativity. The only way that Einstein could make that work is he had to create a variable out of thin air to make that equation work. And everybody knows that. And he's since been proven wrong. As a matter of fact, he came back later in life and said it was the biggest mistake of my life. And so as we study what's going on scientifically, there are many suppositions that people, I'm sure, think that are good suppositions based on the evidence that they have, but there is no hard physical evidence that they can use to explain why the universe is expanding, if the universe is expanding, where the universe came from, or how gravity works. What is gravity? Like, there's all these scientific theories that exist that we bake on, that we take to the bank as fact, that will change 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. And so as I started to recognize that and looking at the experience of my own life and how God had intervened, I could only go to where the evidence was in my own life and say, these are the things that he did in a very real fashion. And I gave you one example, in a different time, maybe I'll tell you the story of how I saved my daughter. I mean, that was an incredible act of God. She definitely should not be here today. And it was only by the grace of God that I discovered what was going on and got up there in the nick of time to save her. I was in Florida. She was in Northern Virginia College. I had to take a flight, first thing, early in the morning to get there to get her before what was going to happen to her happened to her. And it was only by God's intervening grace that I was able to discover that. Wow. I just have to look at the fact that much of science is based on, variables or suppositions that do not have hard fact. And so everything in life we take on some level of faith, and then compare that to the experience of my own life and the evidence that does exist, and put all that together to realize there logically there really is only one path through Christ back to God.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And so Tanis, I just made this suggestion to someone I was on the phone with, right before here, is if you want to know, ask for a sign, study Gideon and the fleece, the story of the fleece. It's amazing, what I've been able to experience, what you've been able to experience.
One more thing. I do want to say one more thing, because I see Tanis, and I appreciate your vulnerability and your candidness in these comments, The only way I got evidence is I finally got to the point where I was willing to see the evidence, to experience the evidence. If we want the evidence, we have to pray for the evidence and be open to it. Do that and see what happens. That's all we can do. Yeah. God will show up, and he will show up in a huge way. Yeah. He always does.
Well said. Well said. Well, Mike, I know. I mean, you're a busy guy, man. You're the CEO. Come on. We don't got all day to chit-chat.
I know. I could talk about this all day, though, I tell you.
But I appreciate you, brother. You're amazing. Thank you so much. I know that someone...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And Joan, look it up. It's in Judges. So look up Gideon and the fleece, where he asked God for a sign, and try it out.
Twice. Didn't believe him the first time. He made him believe it again. That's right.
But Mike, I really appreciate you, man. And I love you, brother. And thanks for sharing, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was nice, being with everybody.
Thank you for listening to Home Business Profits with Ray Higdon. And be sure to head over to rayhigdon.com/profits to download your free audio where Ray shares his 29 sources of network marketing leads. Tune in next time for more tips and strategies on how to become a top earner in your company.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pair.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.